Hi, this is Mark Iverson, owner and founder of Ida History, a small business in the Boise Valley dedicated to providing historical tours and content. Lately, I've been troubled. I've been troubled by a term thrown around in the political arena and on the news far too much, in my opinion, and that is a real American who somehow comprise a real America. And after all, the idea of a nation is a concept, an ideology, and one we share to some degree or the other. And so the idea that you're a real American somehow implies that you possess the spirit of what it means to be American. And America to me is a diverse place, full of different religions, beliefs, political views, cultures, and etc. And so I wanted to kind of dive into this term, and I wanted to talk to people. I wanted to talk to a diverse set of people that live in Idaho, Boise, Pacific Northwest, and perhaps beyond, and ask what their experience was in America, what it continues to be, what their history is, and how they view America. Are they a real American? What is a real American? I wanted to know. And so this is the product, the Idaho Conversations podcast. Join me. Thank you. For this first interview, I talked to Dean Warboys. This was back in November of 2023, before I really knew what I wanted to do for this podcast. And so we were in Julia Davis Park in downtown Boise, and it's a little bit rough. But he's the author of Gay Bars of Boise, and I wanted to know what it was like growing up in the 50s and 60s in Boise as a gay child, and then later as a gay man. And this is our conversation, and I think it's a candid, good conversation, and it's definitely for adults. So, please do make sure that no youthful ears, listen that, you don't want to. So thank you. Enjoy. But, I'm going to do more interviews essentially. And the first person I wanted to interview is Dean Warboys.
Warboys.
Okay. Warboys. And Dean is an Idahoan and an author, a longtime Idahoan and a longtime author, right? And his book that recently came out, I think a couple years ago, is Gay Bars in Boise, Idaho, 1976 to 2021. And so we're here in Julia Davis Park on a beautiful November afternoon. And so you might hear some natural sounds, maybe a car horn or two, who knows, but that's kind of the natural element you're picking up there. But first off, Dean, why'd you write this book?
Well, I was there. The first gay bar opened in 1976, and by then I had come back to Boise. I graduated from Boise High in 64, ran off to Hollywood to be a movie star.
Right.
Well, it was the 60s in California that I fell into, and had a good time, hitchhiked around the country and did all that for 3 years. And then I came back to Boise about 8 years after I had left and went to Boise State College and eventually graduated 2 years later from Boise State University.
And what was your degree in?
In communication.
Okay.
Right.
And so you're an effective communicator.
Well, I really enjoyed the courses, but I have always kept up some writing, and I did a lot of stained glass and that kind of stuff too.
Right, and that'll come into play in a little bit. We'll talk about your stained glass and the gay bars and how your stained glass decorated some of these the interiors of these bars.
It's,
right,
quite a coincidence. The first gay bar, yes.
Oh, yeah. Chucky's, right?
Chucky's, yeah.
Okay, so where can folks buy your book?
At Rediscovered Books downtown.
Right,
Yeah, keep it local, folks. So, speaking of local, you are a native to Idaho and Boise, right?
Fourth generations on both sides of my family.
Right, and so you're going back all the way to at least your grandfather. Your great-grandfather.
Great-great-grandfather.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, he sold off his farm, and that's roughly where part of the white building you said at Boise High School, right?
He sold his farm when they were building. It was originally a red brick building, and they changed that to the white brick building that is to make them sit at the desk and reading and writing and arithmetic.
Damn straight.
That's right. That's right. And then there were those that saying, well, that's why we have so many boys dropping out of school. Let's build a gym in it and see if that doesn't keep boys in school. And it sure did. The enrollment of boys went up 100% while the city grew 15%.
You tire them out, but not too much, perhaps. They'll focus, but, you know, it's, I think a blend of both.
Boys
probably.
Will stay in school so that they can go use the gym and play ball with their buddies.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
I know I did back in the day. So you grew up in Boise. Which schools did you personally attend?
Lowell Grade School, and then North Junior High, and then Boise High School.
Okay, so you're as Boise as it gets. And so, like, you know, I noticed in the book when I'm reading, you're talking about the dentist that you went to see in the Eastman building, walking around for many years in different times of your life, the Mitchell Hotel.
Right.
Right. And these are now sadly gone.
Correct.
But so that got me to thinking, what restaurants did you eat at? Where did you recreate? Where were you cultured at? Can you speak to that? What defined you?
When I was a kid, we would eat, there was a place called The Royal downtown. It was
Oh, I have postcards for that thing.
Sure.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And I remember it was very cool. Once we were leaving The Royal, and one of the waitresses told our folks what great kids we were, how well-behaved kids. That made me real proud. I kind of liked that waitress. I thought, that's a cool job. I wouldn't mind doing that.
Well, they had themed rooms, right? Didn't you go to different rooms?
I wasn't aware of that. We were young kids when we were going there. Yeah.
I know.
There was also Dixon's Steak Seafood House on the corner of Capitol and University Drive. And and the old Torch. That was when the Torch was coming up with their finger steaks.
Oh, right. And it was a nudie bar then too, right?
Oh, no. It was a family restaurant and a bar. They had a bar, but it wasn't a nudie bar.
So it wasn't like the Torch and the Torch 2 that we have?
No, not now. No, that's an entirely different thing. Yeah.
You just cleared something up for me.
No, that was a real... Well, in fact, when I think it was my senior prom or junior prom, we went there and ate dinner for the prom, you know.
And so you're talking about, well, the prom.
That was when I was in high school.
When you were in high school. So when did you realize you were gay? When did you first have attraction?
Well, I didn't have the word for it at all.
Right.
But that came, it had to have been before grade school. All the kids in the neighborhood played doctor. And, you know, we'd pull our pants down and stick each other with sticks and give shots to each other and stuff like that. And I don't know, I had several of the favorite girls that were always wanting to play doctor, and I was fine with that. But one day I was playing doctor with one of the neighborhood guys, and he grinned at me, and he said, I'll tell you, I forgot all about the neighborhood girls, the poor darlings.
Well, I mean, that had to be the way it was when I first saw a boob.
You know, yeah.
You know, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's like, you know, I...
There's something going on there.
I knew I liked boobs.
There you go.
Right? It's just this natural thing that
and
kicks
that was,
in.
I'll bet you didn't figure that out when you were 21.
No, I sure didn't. All right, and so that's just how it was.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, so you come to this realization, and, how did that, I guess, seem as a child growing up in a place that, 1950s, right? 1950s,
well, that would
Boise.
Have been probably 1949.
Okay, yeah. And so you're talking about, you know, old school Eisenhower era.
That's when I first became aware that we had a president and all that was Eisenhower.
And so did you realize that, you know, what at least people are putting out there and projecting was something you had to also project, though you might not have felt that, you know, heterosexualness? And did you feel closeted even then?
Well, a couple things happened. My friend and I, we got to where we were off wood piles and forts and things that we kids went and played in. And one day my mama came out and caught us at it.
Oh.
And I was just so embarrassed going back, walking back next to my mother. I remember that. But I never got in trouble. In fact, years later, I was talking with that friend. And he says, you know, I was always surprised we didn't get in trouble. And she just says, oh, let's go do something else now or something like that. And I remember later I heard her talking with my aunt, with her sister. And she was saying, well, you know, it's natural that they're curious, you know. And so she took a real positive approach toward it. It wasn't like we got in trouble over it, or I got in trouble over it. But it did. I mean, I was a real good mama's boy, and it did really well. At about the same time, too, they decided to keep me out of grade school for a year because I couldn't pronounce my R's. I'd say Keo instead of Carol.
Uh-huh.
And they were afraid that I'd be made fun of. In the meantime, my buddy went to school. Well, he was a big kid in school, and I didn't feel like I could go play with him anymore. I don't know why I got lost in that I'm not good enough thing.
Your low self-esteem.
I guess I didn't think of it as that. But yeah, I'd watch him come from home school, and I just didn't feel like I could go out and say, hey, Freddie, you want to play, you know? So anyway, yeah, I went in a closet. And that doesn't mean that I didn't play around through school. But I'm sure that I am like every other sexual person. If I'd have known then what I know now.
Right.
Because there were opportunities with other students that would smile, and I'm pretty sure that they too were wanting to get together and play, but I just was too shy and oh no, they don't want to do that, and, you know, keeping it inside.
Did that come with a risk, though? Because if you misread those signs, right?
Well, that's also too. I mean, that's still true. I can misread those signs and people figure I'm fair game for beating up.
Oh, okay, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. We were talking about how, before this, how as a heterosexual male walking around, I don't think of certain things.
Right.
It's a world that is defined by heterosexual white males.
That's right.
And so I'm walking around, and I'm not too worried about anything, right?
Right.
And so, like, in trying to get this interview, you're knowledge base is great. You're a walking, talking oral history project for me, right? You're also a human being, and I appreciate your perspective, right? But you know, I was going to interview or work with some other scholars that know a lot about gay history in Idaho and queer community culture and whatnot in Idaho, and they were intimidated to talk about it.
Huh.
And they told me why. They were very generous with their feelings and why that was, but one of them distinctly was, I don't want to be targeted or hurt, and I felt very sad for them and for humanity.
Yeah.
You know, and so I just figured, like...
And it seems like the people who scream the loudest about freedom is the only thing that matters.
Right.
They're the first ones to say, oh, yeah, but my special book says that you shouldn't do this, and my instincts tell me, no, you shouldn't have birth control, and no, you should only have sex when you're married or whatever.
From what I gathered, you know, in my 43 years, is that there are plenty of different interpretations of that one book.
Oh, yes. Right? Oh, my God.
And so, yeah, and I know there are lots of, are passages, you know, there's the Gospels, right? They might say one very different thing from, well, definitely the Old Testament. Right, so people are sitting here trying to use this this book to interpret modern day living, which can and often does clash with the ideals, or idealism that America was founded on. And so the fact that they were afraid to speak their truth and their history and their personal experience in America felt rather un-American to me, you know. So
that's largely why a lot of pilgrims came over here, was to get away from having people's religions control their lives.
Right, and then they started to do that.
Yeah. Right. Well, but again, that is, it's really not a, I don't think that's a majority of, you know, to me, the problem isn't Christianity or Muslims or anything like that. The problem is fundamentalism.
Right,
and
yes.
And be that in politics or be that in religion, you know, my way or the highway. Well, this, I just think that's icky, and therefore I have the right to murder you. You know, right. That's just stupid. Why not talk with them?
We want to talk about we talked about the roots of democracy, and we can get into, and we're not going to get into it too long, but, you know, the French Revolution. Right? Mm-hmm. The revolutionaries, as they take over, they go back and they attack the traditional Catholic Vendee that were agrarian and supported the king and his family, Louis the 16th, and the Catholicism. Right. And so we have the fundamentalist Republicans, you know, revolutionaries, attack the Vendee because they're fundamentalists, but to a political system.
Yeah.
But because they'd been victims of fundamentalists in the past, the monarchy, and it just it goes. But so
there
I see
these people who think like the Taliban does,
right?
You know, I've got a special book that makes it so that I can do whatever I want.
Yep, and then we can act draconian,
exactly,
to you because
however I'm Christian.
Well, so. Back to the 1950s,
okay,
right?
Yes.
No, these all have a place in this conversation. But so, as a gay child and growing into your adolescence, did you start to become aware at how did you feel around the authorities, mainstream society, and was there a counterculture that you identified with?
Not back then.
Right.
The 50s were. They were, McCarthyism.
Right.
You know, I always thought McCarthyism, you know, they were rooting out commies all over the place. But Boise didn't really have any commies. So what they convinced themselves was the boys in Boise are so beautiful and so handsome that they put on extra flights during the summer from Russia so that the Ruskies could come over here and molest our boys.
Right. There was some wacky connection with communism and being gay, wasn't
exactly,
there?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm like, that's a stretch.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, obviously, we all know that
some communists are gay and some aren't.
For sure.
Some gays are Christians and some are Muslims and some aren't. You know?
Right. Yeah. Right. It's, I find that anybody can be gay. You know,
that's right. Yeah.
They don't have to tell. In fact, the people that pretend that they're not are actually the most fervently, you know, at least identified with the anti-gay side of things.
There's a lot of wisdom in the Bible and in Shakespeare. And Shakespeare said, "Methinkest the lady protests too loudly."
Oh yeah. You know? What is that supposed to mean?
Yeah. What are you trying to hide?
Right.
Yeah.
Come on.
And it turned out. Herbert Hoover, who was so anti-gay, he'd go to San Francisco and dance around and drag if
right.
on his time off. Yeah,
right. And he could get in real trouble for that, from what I understand.
He didn't. They didn't discover it till years later.
Good for
he
him,
had
probably.
A lot of power. Yeah, right. A lot of people were afraid of him.
So. He went after gay people.
Oh yeah. He was,
right. Queer community.
Yeah, they were. Well, yeah, they were out to destroy everything that's good, and you know.
Like, we just want to dance and hang out.
I've actually heard people say the trouble that the gay agenda is to make everybody gay.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to draw out of you.
Yeah,
admit it.
Yeah, right.
So,
because I know that you can just make people whatever sex you think you should make them.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, conversion therapy. Really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what was your family's reaction? You said your mother didn't jump on your case when you were caught. Exploring your sexuality with a boy, right? What later? Your father, your mother?
I didn't come out. You know, it was the 50s and early 60s, and I didn't come out to them until after I had left Boise and I was down in Hollywood. And I fell in love. And, you know, when it's when you fall in love. Also, by then, it was getting to where the homosexuality was becoming, it was getting to where people could recognize the fact that sex is a natural thing, and different people have different sex desires.
Right. You see the you know, in the medical community, in science, there's a shift that starts to take place in culture in general in the 70s, but definitely in science.
And in the 60s. I think it was in the 60s that the medical, the psychiatric people got together and decided it's just a part of life. Like, you know, some of us are born horses and some of us are born earthworms and some of us are, you know.
Right.
You know.
And there's been thousands of years of human history to prove that, you know, this is true, but yet we're always pushing
that
ball.
Also, we used to think that, animals never have gay sex. Well, actually, once we quit putting them in boxes where they didn't have any sex at all and started watching, we thought,
Right.
And I was, we had a very randy dog, and he didn't care what he was humping.
there's actually a family, I forget what Midwestern state it was, but they got rid of their dog because it was gay. It was humping a male dog.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're getting, that's the level of.
They were humping. Dogs will hump your leg.
Right. It's a dominance thing.
Species thing.
I remember a line from the movie Gladiator, where one of the guys who, you know, purchases gladiators, he also bought a menagerie of animals, and he said he sold me queer giraffes.
Yeah. Wouldn't let me.
These giraffes and two males and queer giraffes. I can't breed these giraffes.
Yeah.
I
guess they've even found that in fish. Certainly in penguins.
Penguins.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know what penguins are all about. They're all being themselves, getting some penguin love.
That's right.
You know, wearing
that's
their tuxedos.
Exactly.
So that's
all very formal.
So when did you leave Boise? Do you remember
I had dreams of going to Hollywood and being discovered and being the greatest movie star ever.
Right.
And probably some of that was to counter how closeted I was.
Okay.
You know, to be more, I don't know, to have enough influence so that I could be gay or something. I don't know.
Were you seeking a place, perhaps, that you could be more open, or is that me?
I think that was part of
it.
When I first got there, I stayed at the YMCA, and that's YMCAs were famous for guys staying at them and having
right.
a good time.
Right.
And so I stayed at the YMCA for a week, and then I went out and lived in the MacArthur Park area for a while, and then moved out to Hollywood.
Okay.
But I think part of it was to get to a city where I could feel more comfortable being gay. But part of it was also, chasing fame and fortune. It was a great shock to my parents, of course, because they just assumed I'd go to Boise Junior College and on to college.
Well, I started my exploration of many things when I was, 24.
24, yeah.
You know, but I go to Europe for a while, I come back, and I'm like, I don't like this. I don't want to work at a plumbing factory.
You know?
And I go out and I join the Peace Corps, and then, I've been kind of, no matter if you're gay or straight or religious or what, there's a period where you just explore.
You know, I think that's, you go forth and the story of the prodigal son is an old one.
Well, and that world that we go into... We go into the same world, but it's not the same for everybody, right? You know,
right.
It's like, you go out into the world in the 60s, and I would say that for you, it would be a more dangerous world if I was to go out into that world in the same time period. It would be dangerous, probably. It would be, there are risks, but did you feel that on your journey? Were you being... gay, was that more of a risk out and about when you're trying to find yourself?
I really didn't. Well, I had been living with the concept that it being gay is dangerous all my life, since I was
right.
five, or, you know, whenever I started to become aware of other people's opinions about sexuality. Well, I mean, I was aware of that, but also, in a way, that was an ace in the hole for me. The Vietnam War in 64 was just starting to really fire up.
Right.
And everybody, you know, of course, all males were registered for the draft, and they were calling them up. I mean, if you weren't going to school, if you weren't rich enough for your parents to keep you in school, then you went to Vietnam.
Right.
And
whole class struggle in that war.
Yeah.
Going on. Race struggle, everything. So you leave, and you were talking about in the book how post-World War II, a lot of those veterans coming back are gay men, right?
And that was one of the things that started to collapse the gay movement in the United States.
Well, and just like African-American troopers coming back after World War II, there's a, hey, I went out there and I put my ass on the line
and
for
now
you.
I can't sit at a cafe. Right.
Yeah, and there was a, I forget the man's name, but down south, he went in uniform, and a police officer down there, I wouldn't say a police officer, a cop down there, gouges out his eyes.
It's
you,
just,
know.
You know,
and that even got Harry Truman to stand up in front of, you know,
yeah.
and give a human rights speech, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, that's not right. The same thing's going on with homosexual men and some women.
Yeah.
You know, they come back and I guess they're mentally perhaps liberated in the sense that I don't care what happens, but I'm not going to take this shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my thing. Right.
Well, a lot of what happened with the ones coming back from World War II. Well, they had seen Gay Paree. How can you keep them down on the farm once they've seen Gay Paree?
Yeah, right.
And so they came into the cities, San Francisco, you know, all the coastal cities.
Right.
And they thought, why go back to the farm with all those prejudices when I have friends here that are gay and we can just live happily and have normal, free lives. And so that's when the cities along the coasts started to become places where gays felt more free to express themselves.
Right. And you did that, but then you come back to Boise. Why do you come back to Boise?
Well, I came back. I like I say, I was out in the hitchhiking around the country from 69 to about 72. And I went back to L.A. and started dropping a whole lot of LSD.
And Timothy Leary, man.
You know, that's right. Kind of got tired of just going around in circles. And so I thought, you know, I got to get out of here. And so I came back to Boise, and my folks were very good about supporting me. And I went to college and got my degree. Well, I had been used to waiting tables by then. And so I got my degree in communication, and I went and got a job in a radio station. It's the only job I've ever been fired from.
Oh, congratulations.
They had they had this notion I was supposed to show up for work 5 days a week for 8 hours a day.
Oh my God.
That's just crazy talk.
You were made for this economy, the home economy, right?
Yeah. Well, I was raised waiting tables, of course. If I saw it was a nice day at Bogus, I'd just call up one of the other servers and say, hey, you want to work for me? And somebody always wanted the money.
Right.
And I'd go skiing. But what's this 8 hours a day, you know, you have 1 week a year vacation when the boss tells you could go. That's just
a connection to the mountains.
I went right back to waiting tables. In
the
meantime, I'm glad I have my degree because it did open doors. I ended up teaching stained glass in the art department at Boise State.
Really? And, that's cool.
Yeah. And have enjoyed writing and things like that.
Looking at your lamps or the picture you had, I think you have one full lamp in there in your book. That was in Shucky's.
Yeah.
Right? And then you have some close-ups of some of the designs in that glass. I love the colors. I know retro is in right now.
Yeah, right.
I like the shape. It was really unique. It looked like it would be a real pain in the ass to make that, so I know there's some talent there.
That was that five-sided lamp. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That looked like I would have quit on something else. Like, oh, I'm going to do a square. It's going to be a square, you know, your thing, like, right. I don't know how to describe it. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Like a Frisbee.
Thanks, yeah.
Not a Frisbee, even like a...
It is kind of a flying saucer.
Yeah, like a stylish flying saucer.
And I actually made those for a friend that I'd been to school with. He opened a women's dress shop in the old Mitchell Hotel.
Right.
And then he was opening a... co-op, a jeweler craftsman co-op there, also at Mitchell Hotel, and he commissioned me to put the lights in there.
If there was a building I wish was still there, that Mitchell Hotel.
Yeah.
I went and found where it was because I'd talked to you, and I went down and looked at the parking lot
that's down there. That's right.
You know, and then I walked down to, I forget what bar it was, it's closed now, there's Bogey's. And then there, but a lot of those bars are along Front Street, right? And so, you're back in Boise, and that's good.
I found people really are not as uptight about gays as now. People can, if it's illegal, of course, you can have people who use it for power and for influence.
Right.
But,
that's a
yeah.
Vote for me. I hate people.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
That you hate.
And they. And actually, it doesn't even have to be illegal to do that. That you can see that going on,
right?
You know.
Well, and so eventually, you don't have to hang out in the park. You don't have to because you get Chucky's, and it's in the Mitchell Hotel, right? Can you?
Yeah, it used to be there were bars that, you know, they knew that that were gay and
right.
they hung out, and they. In fact, I remember once we were out dancing at the Hi-Ho in Garden City, which was a big cowboy dance bar.
Right.
And we got out, and instead of always the girls and the guys dancing together, we got out there and started dancing, the girls and dancing with each other, and we boys on this one song. I don't know how it happened, but we just started dancing with one another. And when I was coming off, I was kind of afraid, actually. But there was this table of really studly cowboys, you know, kind of guys that I've always been attracted to, actually. And this guy looks me in the eye, and I smiled at him, and he says, "We were wondering when you guys were going to have some fun."
Right, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Heterosexuals aren't that uptight about it.
I find that sometimes I have to kind of quiet my stereotypes of people. That I, you know, if I saw men like that, I would think, of course, they're not going to be okay with gay people.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, that's where I stereotype people.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Mitchell Hotel. And so you're going to places that were gay accepting, right? They accepted the queer community.
Yeah, the weeds and the...
Right.
The... bouquet and
weeds was in the basement of the Idaho where the 10th
exactly
Street Station
right,
is now
right,
and
correct.
And this was one of these you said a go-go bar kind of
yeah place. It was go-go bar. I met a couple some friends down there that I still know,
but Chucky's comes along in 76
right
and this is it, as far as what I got from your book, this is a place where you can feel no this is our bar This is a gay bar.
It was a gay bar, yeah.
And you feel like you don't have to be in an accepting bar. This is our bar.
Yeah.
So people come in, we accept you.
We accept you, yeah, right, exactly.
Right. But they didn't sell liquor because, well, it was the law, right? 19, you could drink beer and wine.
In those days and age, there were beer and wine bars, and then there were liquor bars, yes.
Right.
And I think that's still true. In Idaho, the state of Idaho... issues liquor licenses, but cities and townships and counties issue beer and wine licenses. It's still two entirely different. That's why you can still only buy alcohol at the state dispensary.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, like in Washington, it's under lock and key, but you could go to a Safeway or an Albertsons and you can get your booze.
Yeah, right. Kind of the same thing.
But So basically, you have to go to the Emerald Club in the same building, just down, and that's where you meet Marianne Kelly, right?
Yeah, she had we opened in the south end of the building, Which an interesting part of that was, I was working at the airport at the time in the old flight room.
The Kitty Hawk, right?
The Kitty Hawk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I got a postcard and a matchbox from there.
Oh, yeah, 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 cool, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd like to see the postcard. I'd like a copy of that.
Oh, yeah, I'll send you a picture. I'll send you a picture.
So, yeah, that'd be great. And it was a fine dining. We had abalone and crab legs. And
really?
Overlooking the runway and overlooking the mountains. It was beautiful.
That's when flying was kind of like, it was very like cool. Fancy. I remember back in the day in the 80s, like I felt special going on United.
Yeah.
You know, got crappy meal, but it was cool because you got it on
exactly
a plane.
Right, yeah.
There were still ashtrays in the seat, you know.
That's right.
We didn't use them, but.
Right, yeah.
So anyway,
I went into work one day, and almost everyone on the staff, all these straight people, Dean, did you hear they're opening a gay bar in Boise? I said, no, I haven't heard anything about it.
Right.
Well, it turned out, and the guys that we'd hang out at the park, they didn't hear anything about it. But it turned out that my dentist that I'd had since I was in junior high was opening it. It turned out it had the stained glass that I mentioned because of my friend who had opened a shop previously in that same space.
The Natural Foods.
The Natural, right. Yeah. Well, and also... Well, yeah, it was a natural food and also a artist cooperative, a craftsman cooperative.
Oh, cool.
And I still have a ring that one of the people I commissioned wanted
to make it.
And anyway, and so it had my glass. And also it was right under when I was in junior high, my older sister's, one of her friends, took me to see one of he was one I was running around with him. He says, I want to see this friend. And so we walked in, and here was this, the Mitchell Hotel. By then, when it was built, it was the best,
right?
Because it was right next to the train station. It was
06, right?
Yeah,
is when it was built. 1901 1906, somewhere in there,
I think. Right. So but by the time the late 50s early 60s were there, it was pretty run down. But oh man, there were some really sexy guys hanging out up there in their tank tops. And some of them might even have had tattoos. Oh, my God, it was so scary, but so sexy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, this was the James Dean era, like
old school guys, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, well, they were, you know, they were probably in their late teens, early 20s.
Tough dudes.
Big, scary guys to me. I was in seventh or eighth grade, you know.
I'd befriend those guys so I wouldn't get beat up.
You know?
I told my jokes.
Oh, man, I would have. Anyway, it turned out that it was right under that room, this friend of his room, that they opened up the gay bar, the first gay bar. All three of those incidences or coincidences.
So you learn a lot about yourself at the Mitchell Hotel, right? You kind of...
Well, it was just in and out. I drooled, but I...
Right.
It's way too closeted to do anything.
Okay,
about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Would you spend a lot of time at Shucky's?
Oh, yeah. I'd stop by there every night after work.
Okay, cool. And then would you usually go to the Emerald Club? What can you tell us about that spot?
Initially, I didn't. And I didn't, you know, I've never really been a hard alcohol drinker.
Okay.
But there are a lot of people who did. And so at the time... beer and wine bars closed, I think it was at midnight, and because 18-year-olds, from 18 on up, you could get into a beer and wine bar.
Okay.
But you had to be 21 to go to an alcohol bar.
That seems fair. If you can go to a war,
yeah,
you should be able to have a beer.
Have a beer, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So we went, you know, once you're out of high school kind of thing, basically, is what it was.
Right.
And so... Because they could stay open until 2, all of the gay people would go over there and start drinking. And of course, you could get beer and wine over there too.
Some people don't even
alcohol.
Some people nowadays don't go even go out until 10.
No, well, you that's know? Absolutely right. Yeah,
you go to a bar
for either. I mean, if you're a late night partier.
Well, and at least what I got from reading about what you wrote about Mary Ann Kelly, the owner of the place, was. It seems like she evolved in her perception and then her acceptance of the queer community.
Originally, the straight bars down there were pretty reluctant to start having gays hanging around.
But that green.
But when...
money's green, whoever
has it.
When
gays started coming in and throwing money across the bar and getting five or six at a time so that they wouldn't run out at closing time.
Ooh.
Oh, Marianne, she got to her. But she was a very loving and open and kind person. She was very supportive of the gay community for the rest of her life.
That's the Boise Zoo, folks. We're right next to it.
That's so, right.
Yeah. Take it for what it is, right?
Right. All those animal sounds.
Yeah. Queer giraffes, maybe. I'm not saying.
Right.
We got a couple
That's
of giraffes
good
over
That's
there.
That's right.
So I know one thing that you wrote about with Marianne that she really did that I thought was really great was she started the AIDS Memorial Tree Program in Ann
That's
Morrison
correct.
Park.
Yeah.
Do you remember... How hard did the AIDS epidemic, but pandemic tragedy that it was, hit Boise?
Well, there are an awful lot of trees over there that have memorial
plaques. And they're all Boise people, not Idaho and Mark?
I think, well, a lot of them were, I say, New Plymouth, I'm thinking, but they were over here partying every night, you know,
right.
kind of thing. They were friends of well, the Boise community, because they would know to plant a tree for them. And
well, you know, in San Francisco, when you walk through Golden Gate Park and you go to the Memorial Garden, which I think is a perfect memorial, you know what memorial you're walking in.
Right.
Until your book, I never knew.
Yeah.
That's
so
what
many
that was
trees
about.
In Ann Morrison Park.
Right.
Dedicated to...
I've lived here since 2009, yeah. and I worked for the Parks Department.
Yeah.
And I never knew that.
That's what those plaques are about. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like a shame. I mean, it really does. It seems like more people should know about that.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I honored Marianne with that information in the book. Yeah.
And she was she an advocate eventually for the gay community?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. She ran the, God, I'm drawing a blank. What was the name of her bar? The Emerald. And then she moved it down to 9th Street.
Right.
By where the Jump is now.
Okay.
And when they were building Jump, that was their headquarters for building the Jump.
Right. I went, actually, because I talked to you. Our previous conversation at Flying M, I went down there and took a picture of it, and I was like, oh... I was an old building.
Yeah,
it's down here.
Still standing.
Yeah,
yes,
most of them have been paved over, and we got this weird
right.
thing. But
yeah.
you know that building's still there. But I feel that Marianne Kelly was an ally in a time where you started to get more allies, perhaps in America. But
yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe it was Will and Grace. Became trendy to have a gay friend, especially for like a. I remember it's like the white suburbanite has a gay friend.
Right, yeah, yeah.
right,
yeah, yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But it wasn't
yes.
that for her. She was like...
Well, yeah, she was there all the time, you know, and she'd have, fundraisers for different causes, and her club was a very important part of the community. During... Okay. I do have one little interesting story when... during the early days of the Pride parades, you know, they get together on the Capitol steps and have a rally. And during the rally, initially, of course, there were quite a few people standing on the other side of the street.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It got to be fewer and fewer. But one of the few rallies that I went to, there was a guy standing across the street with a bullhorn, just being as obnoxious as he could be. And we were pretty well ignoring him. But the Idaho Statesman was there trying to interview people, and one of the people that were running the parade, they say, well, why don't you go interview that guy? So he went over and interviewed him, and he kept the guy off his bullhorn. It was really very pleasant. It was great. Well, then the next day, they had an article in the paper about him, and, you know, presenting the reasons that he's protesting. And so he ended with... Used to be we could beat them up and steal their wallets, but now you'd get put in jail for that. So let's see, you're a thug and a thief, and you get put in jail for that. Well, that's not right.
That's what I feel. That's what I feel. A lot of this is these days. This, I believe, it's like the establishment oftentimes just not, they think it's a chipping away at their rights, where it's just like, well, nobody should have the right to be a bully.
Yeah.
And now, at least we'll see where things go, but, yeah. You know, you have a backlash, but people are trying to say, you know, actually, no, you can't be a bully, and we're not going to let you be a bully.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that guy, he's like, I used to be able to
exactly.
be a fucking dick.
Yeah.
And now I don't, now I don't have that right.
Yeah, it's like, exactly right.
You never should have had it.
That's basically what they're saying.
Right.
You never did have that right, but just because you were more powerful than other people, you know.
Right, but then you deny that
power.
If
four of you gang up on somebody and beat them up, well, I guess you, somebody can gang up on your mother.
False victim.
Beat her and steal her wallet.
False victimization is a very scary thought. Yes, for those who are going to be attacked by those people who think they're the victims, but it's scary because exactly that they think they're really victims.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I've, you know, I studied. I got half a doctorate, folks, in genocide studies and hateful ideologies, as fun as they are. And that's one thing I learned for sure. There's always a crybaby in the back of, I guess, little crybaby in the back of a person's mind that is trying to act big and powerful and verbose,
yeah,
and demean somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, or in the leader of a movement. There's always somebody like that guy across the street, you know. You know, yeah. I'm a victim because I can't do this ludicrous
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
Straight society. How did they handle AIDS? Can you generalize their response to it?
To the trees?
To the trees, but also to, you know, just gay men, oh, gay women.
You know, well, of course, the police department, there was a guy named Church that was the chief of police, and he was quite homophobic. He was a fundamentalist.
Right.
And he did everything he could to harass and get that place closed down, starting with just... As soon as they opened, the police were in there looking for all the, you know, licenses and everything. But the dentist had done a real good job of making sure everything was on the up and up.
Yeah, all those licenses.
And, of course, they were always in there looking for underage kids so they could close it down.
And the dancing
but
license.
We knew we weren't going to leave anybody in there, you know.
Yeah, yeah, get out of this way.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're a danger. Well, so they had a dancing license, really. I didn't even think of such a thing. He had a dancing
license. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you still have to yeah. have a license for people to have a dance, to have a dance for. Yeah.
It's amazing to me what we'll create licenses for.
You know, exactly yeah, right.
Like dancing. You have to.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like, what is this, Footloose? Are we all going to get
exactly right,
out?
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon, where
yeah,
are you?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so the other thing, talking of John Church, Boise Police Chief John Church.
Right.
When is his time period? Was it the late 80s? Is this the mid 80s? What are we talking here?
Well, it was the 70s when they opened the bar. I don't know the era that he, I don't know the dates that he was chief of police.
Well, I speak in general of he said that there's a homosexual problem. In Boise, in America in general, yeah. He was speaking to. But he was talking in reference of repealing the sodomy law.
Well, what happened was Idaho was the first state in the union that actually did repeal the sodomy laws. That was during the 1970s when, well, it had been working out. I mean, most of our criminal laws were written in the 1800s and the 1700s.
Right.
And we'd kind of started to think, you know, why do we have laws against, you know, sex outside of marriage? But we did.
Thou shalt not pet the porpoise on Sunday.
That's right, exactly.
On the Sabbath.
Yeah.
Beat the bishop.
We'd gotten rid of, you can't have a store open on Sunday.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And, so, and pornography, we'd kind of figured out that, no, that doesn't cause the end of society. And, you know, that was the 1950s Hugh Hefner's fight.
Right.
And so, anyway, it was getting to where we were just, you know, there were a whole lot of these laws that just no sense. They weren't enforced, so why have them?
Right.
And so under under what was his name? He was vice president with Ike, and he ended up leaving the presidency. I should know. Anyway, it was under that Republican presidency that they came. They had rewritten the codes, and they didn't say states had to adapt them, but they said, "Well, let's just kind of this would be kind of a good standard to start with." So Idaho, since he was a Republican, and you know they were going along with it, and so they just passed all of these new codes. Well, one of the things that they got rid of was the law against sodomy. Whatever, and in Idaho, sodomy also means oral sex.
Okay, and yeah. So, watch out, straight folks.
Yeah, that's right.
And gay folks, you're all in there.
Only that boy-girl thing to make a baby is the only thing that you should be doing.
Yeah, don't enjoy sex.
Exactly right, because if you don't tell people that they can enjoy sex, then they won't. You're yeah. right, because nobody would ever think of it.
Speaking of the Puritans,
exactly
all the way
right,
back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, they had passed that. Well, they realized that they had made sodomy legal, which opened up homosexuals being okay instead of sick or whatever.
Right.
And so Frank Church, or not Frank Church, was it John Church?
Yeah, John Church.
The chief of police, testified in front of the Idaho legislature the next year that, well, no, now I can't take care of the homosexual problem because I can't arrest them for butt-fucking.
Right, you know, right. But what if straight people do that, sir?
Exactly. Yeah. How many
they're married. They can do whatever.
Absolutely. Well, in fact, you can force your wife to do it whether she wants to or not.
Oh, right. Exactly. Yeah, that's what it used to be, right? I mean, those are all very... it's amazing how many, based on the idealism of America and our principles... how un-American Americans have been.
You know? Yeah.
You know?
The Jim Crow era was just horrible.
We've been grappling this ever since the beginning of our nation.
Oh, we are
still grappling with it.
It's called humans. I mean, they're always going to be fundamentalists. And they're always going to be people that are quite outrageously feeling free.
We can write down those ideals, and they're great.
Yeah.
But we rarely live up to them. Sometimes we do. And, and you know, oftentimes, you know, like this concept of the real America, I've never understood it. It's like, you talking about population-wise? Because no.
Yeah.
To what my real America is much different than what another person's real America is.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And so we get, you know, in your book, you talk about the sodomy law, and you talk about church, and you start to learn about the Bible, and you know, you have gay bars, but you also talk about how you can't always go into straight bars. You talk about in the place that weeds used to be in the basement of the Idaho, people would call the vice squad on you because the bar has all of a sudden switched.
A guy opened it up. He had to get rid of the whole hippie happening. You know, he wanted to turn it into I don't know what he wanted.
But even if you're a gay guy in a bar, you're still somebody who's buying a drink.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing to anybody? You're not like you're just a guy who's gay in a bar.
Yeah.
Right? Why is he coming after you? Why can you... The fact that he could call a vice squad on you and get you in trouble just speaks to the whole problem with the whole system in that time period.
Having laws like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, you should be able to drink wherever you want as long as you're not doing anything. But they're like, oh, you are
and
doing
personally,
something.
And personally, if he didn't want me there, he could have just asked me not to come in. I wouldn't have come in, you know?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right.
I don't want to be in a bar where the owner doesn't want me there.
Right. I don't...
But,
I can't even handle. I went to a bagel place today, and I didn't feel wanted there. I'm like, well, what a bunch of jerks! I'm not going back to this bagel shop.
Yeah, well, you have your hat on backwards, dude.
I know, right? Yeah, and it says nature and shit. You know,
oh,
it kind of makes fun
that.
Of like you
I
know the
fun,
Patagonia move.
Yeah. Well, shit has a lot to do with nature.
It's kind of the most important building block,
you know.
So, you know, you get Prop 1, and what did they call their thing? Oh, something about it always involves family. Let's see, what did they say?
It was, I think, Focus on the Family.
Yeah,
it came out of Colorado, that whole movement. Yeah.
And so I'm thinking to myself, Well, family's kind of broad. You're not speaking for my family.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like eventually Prop 1 in Idaho got overturned because it kept being deemed, in other states too, unconstitutional. Right? What
well,
did exactly
what
say?
Happened was they had passed it in several places, and they started going to all the conservative states first.
Right.
So that they could say it was normal. So, and of course it was challenged on constitutional grounds, because what it said was that anybody who worked for the government, anybody who was involved with the government at all, could not say anything positive about gays.
Freedom.
But you can invite fundamentalists into the school to talk about how gays are all rapists and they do nothing but rape children and they have no interest in their they slobber on the sidewalks, and you say anything you want, but a teacher couldn't say, no, that's not true.
And we're sitting right across from, we're near the Greenbelt.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't there yet, but down along the river somewhere, right? We're talking Boise of Boise, 1954.
Boise, yeah, it was...
Right. So, I mean, yeah. So this stuff did happen, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, but they...
That was in the 50s. That was before the... That was in the 50s. This was happening in the 70s,
yeah,
as I remember.
But you still have these implications where... And you still have them today where, in the Boise of Boise case, you had... basically pedophiles, but those two or three pedophiles, they immediately go gay men, gay men, gay men, gay men, right?
Oh,
and
yeah,
they start linking it to gay men.
Plus, dads couldn't walk down the street with their kids.
And therefore you're lewd, right?
Yeah.
They try to define you, gay men especially, as lewd.
Well, what happened was, from what I've heard, some of the boys at Boise High School, that's the only high school there was at the time.
Right.
You know, 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds, figured out that they could make money. They were actually gay kids, gay 17 and 16-year-olds, down near, out looking for sex anywhere they could find it. Just
right.
Like any 17-year-old is.
Right,
know?
Right.
To
drive. You know,
and
hungry,
yeah,
drive.
It's how the world goes around. It's what keeps life happening. So, whatever.
Well, and you also have women. You have prostitution in Boise at the same time, but
absolutely, yeah.
But and you have kids that aren't prostituting themselves or straight, and they're trying to have a romp in the bushes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, yeah,
exactly.
That's going on. You have all the whole equation, but they're very quick to say, okay, let's go after gay men. And it seems like 20 years later, Prop 1 is just a way, way bigger witch hunt.
Well, Prop 1, gays started to get some rights, and it started to get where some city councilmen in San Francisco and things like that were gay. And
right.
They were electing gay people to office.
And Harvey Milk?
Yeah. And the backlash to that was focused on the families. And of course, it's profitable. It's easy to get people concerned and sending you money because, we've got to fix up this problem that I didn't realize was a problem until you told me it was.
The gays are coming.
Exactly, exactly. Idaho was the first state that that voted that down. Said, no, we're not going to vote for that.
And that's good. I know there are different reasons, but...
There were other reasons involved, too. There's a lot of speculation that the same group that was doing that had been out just the year before saying that Mormons are a cult and we have to, you know, be afraid of Mormons. And from what I hear, kind of some of the bishops kind of, they didn't make a point of it, but they said, you know, these people are not really out for freedom. These people are not who we want to be siding with.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Kind of like that, yeah.
Sort of a situation.
So anyway, that might have been why that got voted down.
And so, but because of this, you start looking into, well, you're part of a group called No on One, and you start looking in the Bible.
Well, my approach, No on One was well-organized. people that were into politics, and they came up with it, you know, to vote against this Proposition 1. I got curious. I says, well, what does the Bible actually say about homosexuality? Because you always hear, oh, well, it says in the Bible. And there is that one line out of the, I think it's 780 laws and rules and regulations in Leviticus. One of them, just for one little line, says a man who sleeps with another man, as with a woman, should be put to death.
And you think this would be like the, that's all the Bible's about, the way we talk nowadays. Oh my God, it's the no gay men book.
People just pick out what they want from the Bible.
Right.
So, now they didn't point out that the message just before that was, if a man sleeps with a woman who's menstruating, he has to be thrown out of the tribe for a month, which, if you're nomads on a desert, being out of the tribe for a month, you probably aren't going to survive it.
That's right.
And the message, the one before that, was if a woman is menstruating or is unclean, she should be thrown out of the tribe for 3 months.
Is that the tent? You got to go in the tent? The red tent concept?
No, they
should go
out of the tribe to survive in the desert by herself.
But then how do they procreate?
Well, that's the whole thing. Once, they called it bitter waters. Once a woman has her first menstruation, that's acceptable. But from then on, they're supposed to be pregnant.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they are small tribes surviving in the desert. Now, was that ever enforced? You can't keep a woman pregnant all the time and let, she never menstruates. I mean, you'll kill her.
All right.
Yeah. Women just aren't
having babies
physically
back then
made to put up with constantly being pregnant.
Right.
But that was the law according to Leviticus. There are all kinds of, Leviticus is just full of things that, now to me, one of the lessons that Christ taught was, as you judge the least of your brethren, so you are judging me, said Christ. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're using Leviticus to judge somebody, you better make sure you're living by every single one of those 784 laws in Leviticus, because you will be judged by Leviticus, according to Jesus.
I believe I'm an old school, Democrat. I'm a old school liberal in the sense that I think freedom of speech is very important.
Yeah, I think so.
and I was thinking on the way down here, you don't have to accept a gay person's lifestyle. You don't have to agree with it. But they don't have to agree with you.
Exactly.
And they don't have to accept what lifestyle you want to impose on them. And there's this church here called like Shield of Faith or Faith Shield.
Yeah.
And he says what you're talking about, Leviticus.
Yeah.
Whatever. I am not a religious person, folks. But he talks about, that gay people should be killed.
Murdered, yeah.
And murdered. And that this is in the Bible. And so I think he should start living by his code, right? He should start applying that to himself.
Well.
Right? What about this whole, like, thou should not kill thing?
Yeah.
Well, that might get in the way.
Yeah.
You know?
What about, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor? Oh, all homosexuals are child molesters. No, they're
right.
Not.
You don't
That's
know that.
That's bearing false witness against your neighbor. You know?
Yeah, right. I mean, there's we get in contradictions all day, but
yeah.
I guess that's your, at least to me, that's activism. You are learning the language of those that oppress you, and you're trying to know all you can
right.
about it.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, what does the Bible actually say? So I went and researched it, and it was really interesting. I put out a little booklet, and one of the amusing things about that, the internet was just getting started. This was before www, where you had search engines and all that.
Right.
But there were bulletin boards out there, which if you knew how, you could put in their address. Well, one of the bulletin boards was a place for gays to talk with each other about gay issues. And so I put out there that I had this and that I would send you a copy for $3, and that included the postage and everything. And the very next day, I went to sleep that night. Very next day, I had an order from CUNA, and I had an order from London.
Wow, well, yeah.
And right. I thought, this is what the internet means. This is, I mean, we are now a one world. I mean, we all live as neighbors.
And there's somebody out in London going, oh, shit, this is something I wanted to know about.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, in fact, today, you know, when I first read your book, and I read about that, across the ages, yeah. You know, I'm like, oh, man, that's great. I need a synopsis.
Yeah.
You were talking about that even a bishop here, what, the Episcopalian,
the,
or was
the
it?
The Episcopalian, the bishop of the Episcopalian Church here in Idaho, ordered, I think it was 24 copies to educate his clergy with that.
Well, know? Good for
I
him.
I was complimented that he took my research seriously. You know, I was complimented as a researcher.
I think that's great. Yeah. I mean, you should be. I also think that, you know what? You know, Christianity does not have to be opposed to queer culture, just like it doesn't have to be opposed to menstruating women. Obviously, yeah. Right? I still don't believe it, but
or,
that's America,
or
so,
Muslims,
right?
Or Muslims or anything
right.
else, you know.
Right. Yeah. But, okay, so I've learned a lot. Things aren't necessarily how I you know thought they would be. You know, in my mind, I was talking to my buddy Clay, and he's a black man in Seattle, and we've had some good talks. But I'm like, you know, whenever I see a black person, I'm like, it's a civil rights issue. I want to talk to them about civil rights.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
I think all black people in America must know about civil rights. And it's like, no, of course. It's like, yeah. And therefore I step out and I'm like, you know what, if you're a gay man or a gay woman or a transgender person, you must live opposed to society at all times.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think I'm learning as I go.
Yeah.
Like, that's not necessarily the day in, day out for all gay people. Even back then, right? You
yeah.
know? But then I've heard of places, especially small towns, where that is true, you know, and so
you know,
it's the applying that lens.
Although even in small towns, I don't know, I've never had trouble with small towns, but then I don't go around demanding that people know that I'm gay either. I'm a guy.
You're just Dean.
Just like anybody else.
Yeah. And Dean's all right, by the
way. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, that's right. So the last thing I wanted to know is,
okay.
or talk about is... gay bars. Can you name some of the gay bars? You have them in the book. We still have the balcony, and we have the old ranch club down there in Garden City.
Somewhere.
The horse is there. Yeah, I went there and sang AC/DC's Big Balls.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And these three guys, I'd say, probably in their early 60s or late 50s, were like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was the nicest time. I went to the ranch club before it was somewhere too,
right.
and it was not as welcoming, you know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Like, I go to a gay bar as a straight dude, and
yeah.
I have a great time.
Yeah.
And I go to a straight bar as a straight guy, and I don't have a good time.
So yeah, some people are just I don't know if they're shy or you're not part of us, or you know, because you go in there 20 times, you'll probably become accepted, but the first time is kind of a...
Well, I went with a friend of mine, a lesbian woman named... I guess that went kind of in tones, isn't it?
Right.
But, and she was known there, so perhaps I was... you know, but I mean, it was a great time with karaoke.
Yeah.
And people had a comfort there that I just, like, found infectious.
Yeah.
And so I got up there, and I was like, I'm going to do my big balls. I do that anywhere. It's my go-to. It's easy to sing. It's a slow
I must
cadence.
Have been having that... I don't know, it's a stallion or a whatever, rearing up with his privates showing his...
It looks like it's gone.
Like, well, it's still there. Must have been there for... It's a horse, I mean.
Oh.
You know, what are you supposed to do, put a diaper on it?
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe.
Right, exactly.
But, so those are two of the gay bars that are still there. Now, you got the Neurolux downtown that you mentioned, which
That's
is gay-friendly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Right.
Actually, I think it's beyond gay-friendly. It's just simply what the fuck difference?
Yeah, who cares? Right, exactly.
You know?
That's what I've always... All this religious stuff aside, and, you know, I don't speak from that point of view, but Who cares who somebody's diddling and how they're diddling them? It's not your business. Like, yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, but that's where that concept, I think, of, oh, they're coming to convert us to gaydom.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
no, you're trying to convert them to whatever they, like, literally, you are trying to convert gay people to conversion therapy, and you're scared of them. You know, it's that concept, I think, that gets in the way of that who are you diddling thing. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? But I like that there, the concept that there are, like, gay bars, like, I just would like to have, I guess, as a straight dude again, I like to have bars, just like anybody can,
you know,
and hang out kind of bar. Yeah. Like, the fact that there is a gay bar states that there is a problem somewhere with gay people at a bar, right?
Well, and that's one of the things that happened was we got, you know, Emerald Club, and those straight people found out that it's fun to go party at the gay bar. So we just got to where it didn't matter, you know.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, up in Capitol Hill.
I think that's one reason there aren't so many gay bars now. It's just gotten to where... go hang out wherever you want to hang out, you know?
Capitol Hill in Seattle, I went to a place called The Bus Stop, and there was this guy sitting there, and he was all by himself, so I was inviting him over because I felt bad for him. And this is me not thinking, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, come on, take a Jaeger shot with us, you know? And I'm a one man with a bunch of women waiting for my buddy to come. And it became apparent to me at the bus stop. It was a great time, but also I'm buying this guy drinks and invite him over. And at the end of his time there, he walks out and he's like, you're a real cock tease. I was like, oh shit, that's right. I'm at a gay bar. I didn't even realize, it didn't come into my mind. Yeah. It was just a fun place to be. And it was a group of straight women and one straight dude in a gay bar because it was a fun place to be.
Exactly. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
But I didn't even think of the, like, you know, my place in that bar doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, but, so I always felt like, oh, you're kind of an ass, Mark. But I was trying to be nice.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
But anyway, and so what are some of the other gay bars that there were? There was Chucky's, obviously, and that became Stoplight.
That eventually became Stoplight. Chucky's opened there on the corner. That would have been on the corner of, what was that, 11th? I think that's 11th and right, you know, just west of the Hotel 43.
Right.
I think that's 11th Street. And then they opened a gay bar called, you mentioned it earlier, it was a big dance club. But they opened that on the corner of
Boogies?
12th. So... Bogies, yeah. They opened Bogies. And then right in between them was this little straight bar left over from when those were railroad bars down there.
The little ones, right?
Yeah, the little, it's called the Oli.
Yeah, the Oli.
Just like, and the Emerald Club used to be an old bar for the railroaders down there, too. It's,
right.
Hard drinking bars.
Well, and Front Street became a place where the gay bars were.
Well,
it seems like there are quite a few.
With us walking back and forth beside in front of the Oli all the time, we started hanging out there because there's no way you could make it two whole blocks with having a cocktail.
Right. I know. You can't, exactly. You can't have a free hand.
Exactly.
It's
right.
Not possible.
And so it wasn't long before that was a gay bar. And that was a real funky, that was not a disco. It was just a funky men's, pretty much dominated by men just because that's how it was. Drinking beer bar, and that became my favorite. I like kind of funky bars.
I'm actually trying to create a tour for Ida History. It's
for funky bars.
Funky bars,
yeah.
Just something that's unique kind of place.
Yeah.
But we'll work on that. But so in those books, they're Dameron's, and I equated it to a green book for gay people.
Which really was, I wasn't aware of green books at the time, but that's a pretty good description.
Yeah. Right. And for you folks, you know, if you were a black American on the road trying to drive from town to town, you had you had safety concerns and places that you could not be.
Walk into places.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And so these green books were guides to tell you where, you know, the bars where you could go into, hotels, restaurants, everything. And so Dameron seemed like that, at least.
It was a guide to gay culture. They'd have the local metropolitan churches. They'd have the gay-friendly places to stay, and they would have all the gay bars. And that was, I used Dameron's guides for years and years and years. When I went to Europe, I got a Dameron's guide and cut out all the pages that were places I wasn't going to go because I had a 18-pound pack, so I wanted to keep it low.
Well, and they're more online now? Are they still in
They're
Vogue?
All online now, yeah.
Right, so, I mean, looking through all these places that the bars that we're talking about would be listed in these, and oh, there's your stained glass window.
Yeah.
But they had codes. Here we go. They had a key to the codes as they were in Dameron's.
Right, right.
And so I'm looking at all the diversity. You have bear bars for bears, right?
Bears meaning guys, bigger guys, maybe hairy.
Yeah, yeah. And then you got little guys, the cubbies or cubs.
The cubs, yeah.
And they're little hairy guys?
Or
they don't have to be hairy guys?
You know, those terms are largely, a lot of it has to do with how big around you are.
Okay. Yeah. Really, it's more about round.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you got, so you have, let's see, transgender-friendly bars.
Right.
And that made me think, well, then you maybe have gay bars that are not welcoming to trans people.
That's right.
They
had lesbians bars that were not welcoming to guys.
I think they had
guy bars that were not welcoming to women.
There was a show on, was it FX or AMC? It was called Pose. And it was about drag competitions. And dance back in New York City in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the first times that I realized that there was a big divide, because there's a scene where this transgender woman is thrown out on her ass from a gay bar.
Yeah.
And they're like, but it was like a conservative gay bar, you know? And yeah. I'm like, oh, crap, there's, yeah. We were talking.
There were piano gay bars, and there were leather gay bars, and there were, yeah.
Well, you have, like, older crowd, more mature. They get really, like, strippers and go-go.
That was one of the delightful things, because it had gotten, by the time I came back to Boise in the early 70s, the bigger cities had gotten to where, you know, if you were into leather, you didn't go to bars associated with women at all, including drags and all that. And they were all kind of divided. Came back to Boise, and there was only one bar, so we all partied together. And I liked that. I found out, you know what? Those drag queens aren't as, they're a lot of fun, actually. They have a lot more balls than I do. I mean, oh, my God.
And
walk around town like that.
Well, Stonewall in New York, yeah. It was the drag queens that were like, fuck you.
That's right.
And they're like, we're tough.
Started fighting back with their high heels.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I went to San Fran several years ago, and we went to the Castro District.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there were some drag queens that were, they could be linebackers. They were just jacked. And I'm like, that old adage that straight men can beat up a drag queen, it very much depends on who that drag queen is.
Twice, yeah.
I just remember watching a American Experience on PBS about Stonewall. And there were a lot of manly police officers down there that were very scared of those drag queens when they got outnumbered and encircled like that.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't talking tough anymore. Yeah. But anyway, there's so much I could talk about. I guess what I want to close with is, you know, yeah, there's a lot of diversity in the gay community, the queer community.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, I'm still learning, obviously, but I think the reason I wanted to do this interview is because, you know, history is not always, you know, about what you agree with. In fact, I think it's most important when you might not know or understand it. That's when it needs to be talked about. And I don't like, you know, every time I do a history post about queer history, queer culture in Idaho, you know, a lot of support. But I always get a vocal few like, I'm not fucking following you anymore. I'm like, good.
Right, exactly.
Or groomer. I get a I'm like, what?
Groomer.
Oh, that's not history because Idaho's not gay. I'm like, well, I beg to differ.
Exactly.
And so I'm like, okay, even if you oppose the gay community, the queer community, that's history. Why?
Yeah.
I might think you're a dipshit, but why are you a dipshit? Yeah. You know, like, that's history. So, of course, this is history. And when somebody tells me to shy away from somebody, I want to go right at it. And that's just what I like to do.
It amazes me that one of the big movements is, oh, that's woke.
Right.
That's woke. Teaching people's history is woke. Now, as I remember, Jesus said, do unto others as you have them do unto you.
Right.
Well, you want them to learn your history, don't you? And yet, if they want you to learn your history, well, that's woke. That's woke. They only do that to make us feel bad because we're white, rich people.
Well, it's if it's opposed to their idealism and
exactly.
and the framework for their belief
yeah.
systems. You know, I can't understand why, you know, people like slavery, the history of slavery in America, always rumples feathers. It's like, but we're exceptional. I'm like, well, maybe for you, America has been exceptional. But if you're a person that, you know, is a descendant of slavery and have still been oppressed, America's a different place.
Yeah.
This is not their experience.
Or if you're coming in with your exceptionalism and saying, and therefore I'm justified in taking all your land.
Right.
And you're hunting and you're fishing and you're...
Right.
I think that being awake to the feelings and experiences of others is what we should be striving to do all through our lives. So actually what woke means, it just sounds to me like it's a whole lot of, well, we can teach our history about how exceptional white people are.
Right.
And people from my religion, but not people from your religion.
Right.
Because that's, you know, well, I think we should learn this history of people from all religions if you're going to learn history of anybody's religions.
Well, this is perfect because as we're talking about what I really wanted to sum up with, you know, why is queer culture and history important to America?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it isn't. You know, it's just a fact of life.
Right.
It seems to me like you'd want to learn about all of life, not just... I mean, why is the history of bulldogs important? Well, because if you're into the history of dogs, every dog is. You should learn the history of all the dogs, you know?
Right, exactly. I mean, I think the fact that people have such a problem with it is why it needs to be taught. Because you I think, you know, and that goes for any other, you know,
yeah.
minority group that's been oppressed, is you need to teach about that oppression.
Yeah.
You don't just teach about that, though. But, you know, I think there's a lot to celebrate in queer culture. I love...
Yeah.
I go to the Flying M because I feel accepted there in my
right.
weird rocker
yeah.
shirts. And,
you
know, I it's not because it's a gay bar. It's because it have awesome baked goods and a great
exactly
shop.
Right. Yeah.
But also, I just feel at ease there.
Yeah.
Right? And so, I mean, that's a benefit
yeah.
I have of a queer spot.
Yeah.
You know. Well, buildings can't be queer, but you know
I don't,
what I mean.
Yeah. I never think of the Flying M as a queer spot. I just think of it as a coffee shop where a lot of gay people hang out. But
well, right, but it has basically been, I mean, there are pride flags all over. They sell a lot of gay, you know,
that's true,
friendly
yeah.
stuff
yeah,
and jokes at people who are anti or homophobic people,
yeah.
you know, and but what I get even more than that is, no, it's just a place that is as long as you're cool with people that aren't like you in many ways, but you know, we all share that belief that yeah, it's cool to be who you are.
Well,
just be yourself.
You says we're all Americans,
unless you're a dick and
we
you
all,
hate people.
Yeah. We're all Americans. We believe freedom is the most important thing,
right? And we try to live up to it.
That's right.
Well, Dean, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk again. I'm going to read your blog, and folks, my card was put away. But Dean, War Boys. I'm gonna screw that up a couple. I'm sorry. He has a blog, right? And he not just about, you know, being a gay man in Idaho, but he has where you're talking about camping with all the like pack horses in the 50s and all sorts
We'd be
of
in
experiences
the Sawtooth for a week and not see anybody.
Wow, that's so awesome.
But yeah, we had to. My dad had rent horses in Atlanta or Grand Junction or someplace like that. And we'd pack up two of them, and one of them we put a saddle on and put us kids on that when we got fussy.
Well, I'm interested to read some of these. So you said www.greatwahoo.com. And then we have Dean's Great Wahoo.com.
Yeah. Now, yeah, Dean's Great Wahoo is my blog, and that's where the stories of my hitchhiking and my dancing through the years and the being in the Sawtooths. The other is has more of lists of all my publications and writings and things like that.
Okay, well, so check it out. A lot of Idaho history there, a lot of experience.
Yeah.
And also, anything else you're writing? Are you booked out after?
I'm not really doing much now. I'm just kind of still coming up with stories on my blog, which I may eventually combine some of those stories into a book format.
Well, you should. I would buy it.
Okay.
All right, Dean.
Well, I do have a book out there on the history of Boise High School and another on the history of geothermal development here in Boise.
Oh, no kidding. Was that thesis? Because I read something about that. Maybe you're the guy who wrote that thesis.
Yeah, I put out a... Well, I just started writing a... Don't get me started, because I will write just a little article to send somewhere, and it'll end up being a book. So, you know.
Right.
You know how that goes.
It's a dangerous path, right?
Exactly.